Moving on to item number three, capital and asset management program. This is a briefing. Bill Phillips, you've got a workload ahead of you.
Yes, we do. and we're happy to have it. Madam Chair, members of the Commission, for the record, my name is Bill Phillips. I'm the Assistant Director for the Capital Asset Management and Planning Program. What I'd like to do today is just very briefly, and I do mean very briefly, I will watch the clock, run through the program, and what we're trying to do is give you an update of what CAMP actually does, why we exist, and the things that we do. So, moving on. And I do want to point out that I am appropriately using the computer today, so you want that on the record. Program overview. So what we want to talk about today are essentially five basic items: the role of CAMP in the agency, the services we deliver, how we're organized, and we'll talk about that just very briefly, what our budget looks like, and then some of the accomplishments. I'd like to roll through some of those just very briefly at the back of the program. So let's start. CAMP's role in the agency, and very succinctly, what we exist to do is support the programs within the department with design expertise and physical resources. That's why we exist. That's why we're here. The wildlife program, habitat program, fish program, enforcement program are all out there on the front line providing services. CAMP's role is to make that as easy for them as we possibly can. That's why we exist. So let me talk about the organization a little bit. Some of the services that we provide, the first one that I want to touch on is project management. And I started out with the first bullet talking about managing consultants and contracts. And basically what we try to do when we're delivering the services and the infrastructure improvements to the agency, a great deal of the work is contracted out to consultants and to contractors. And so part of our job is to make that happen as effectively as we possibly can. Budgeting. One of the key things that we do as in our project management group is we develop budgets. We do some of the forecasting necessary. We do some of the planning necessary to create budgets, get the funds, and then control the funds and make sure that we do it legally, ethically, and as efficiently as we possibly can. Scope development. What this actually tells us is that one of the things that we're trying to do when we're creating things for the department, we want to make sure that we're creating what's necessary for the department to move forward. So we focus on the function of the different operating programs, and we want to try to tailor the infrastructure improvements to meet their specific needs. It's a real key focal point for us in scope development. It's not what we think is necessary, but it's what the customer needs to do their job. That's one of the key pieces that we're really looking at. Scheduling. So when we talk about scheduling in the traditional project management sense, a lot of times what we're talking about, we talk about things like on time, on budget, and full scope. Well, what we're trying to do and what I really want to impress on scheduling is what we're trying to do is deliver the service as it's needed. So if we provide an infrastructure improvement, it's not that we're just doing it within a specific timeline, but it's also thinking about when is that improvement actually necessary. So it goes beyond just a project focus and into an entire program focus, and not just one biennia, but several biennia. And it's kind of a cultural change that I'm talking about, but it's a change that's necessary within the agency, especially given the tough economic times that we're focused on right now. Then the last bullet is planning. So the planning effort itself ties in with all of the other bullets up above. What we're trying to do is make sure that we know what we have for infrastructure, that we know where our priorities are, and we know when things must be delivered and what the right things to deliver are. It requires that we do a great deal of cross-program coordination with the operating program. So as we create a 10-year plan, we're making sure that what's identified in there really represents the long-term needs of the agency. So those are five key elements associated with project management on more of a global basis that we're trying to focus on. The other one is engineering and design. We have a very strong engineering and design staff that has very specific expertise in quite a few areas. The first one is fish hatcheries. If you're looking for people to design fish hatcheries, you look at our program. We've got the staff that know how to do that. Wildlife area, roads and structures being things like bridges, culverts, fish passage, things like this. Again, we have very strong expertise in that area, as well as what I would call pocket expertise in the operating program. So again, it gives us the opportunity to make that linkage cross program. Dams and dikes, access sites, again, strong expertise in that area. Restoration projects, this is one that's also very interesting. Habitat program within the agency has some very strong engineers and biologists that have a tremendous amount of expertise in restoration projects. So what we've been doing over the last couple of years is creating a partnership between the two programs that when one of these projects needs to move forward, we do it as a team. That we don't look at expertise just in one area or the other, but we're able to move forward as a team. It's a very good marriage. Cooperative projects, those are with parties outside of the agency. We still have a considerable amount of those that we work with. And then I have water control structures associated with things like hatchery intakes and then fish passage. Maintenance and construction services. So we provide the core maintenance services for fish hatcheries, and we do a considerable amount of it for the wildlife areas also. Construction services, a lot of irrigation and screening services in eastern Washington, and we also do quite a bit of fish haul within the agency, moving fish from one location to the next. I will step back one bullet. Irrigation and screening, I do want to make a plug for my people in Yakima. They are, when you talk about irrigation and screening expertise, the people in Yakima, even as small a shop as that is the bastion of expertise, as far as I'm concerned, in the Northwest. Those are the guys. If you want it, those are the guys to go to. Facility management. Unfortunately, our facility management group has dwindled from two FTEs down to one FTE, but the workload continues to increase. And again, as with the others, we hold a very high level of expertise. And I just threw three bullets up there. The NRB issues, I think everybody's aware of some of the issues that we're struggling with in this building. It's got some problems, and our neighbors across the street, Department of Enterprise Services, are working diligently to try to resolve them, but it still creates a considerable workload for us to just survive and manage. Okay, doing good on time. Facility leasing. Julie does a lot of leasing. As large as this agency is and as diverse as this agency is, we have many, many facilities outside of the Olympia area, which requires a considerable amount of management and effort, again, to make sure that we're providing the facilities and the infrastructure necessary for our operating programs within the agency. Then consolidation coordination. This is really kind of a key piece that we've started focusing on more and more. As revenue within the state continues to be challenged, one of the great opportunities that we're compelled to look at is opportunities to consolidate areas that we have as an agency, but also to look at areas where we can do co-location with other agencies. And it's really a drive that we're starting to emphasize. Julie's doing a great job with that and will continue to do so. But again, it's a big challenge, but it's one that we're up for. Asset management. If you recall reading the Burke report, if you were able to not fall asleep getting all the way to the end of it, one of the things that it really pointed out to us was the necessity to really take a look and start to manage our assets as assets. So a couple things that we did coming out of the Burke report and the CPAP report was we went through and did a very expensive condition assessment about 4 years ago to take a look at all of them, or the bulk of our infrastructure, and ask the question, what do we need to do? And we created that document, which was the genesis of us being able to really identify what our backlog looked like and give us the opportunity to start planning backlog reduction. Last year, we went through and updated the condition assessment, and the plan is that every 2 years we will go through and do so in a coordinated fashion with the rest of the agency. Budget development, I've talked about that actually considerably already, so I won't spend a lot of time on that, as well as capital planning, excuse me, and maintenance planning. So some of the things that we've done in regards to maintenance is, again, 3 years ago we went through and created a preventative maintenance plan for hatcheries, and then over this the long period of time, what we started to do is implementation of that plan. Maintenance planning is one good piece, but the other challenge that we're struggling with is maintenance funding and implementation. Now, the cool thing about this is not in this last long session, but the session before, there was recognition by the legislature that we have a need to increase our maintenance funding so we don't continue to burden the capital budget with things that are falling apart and failing. So it appears that we've gotten our message across, and there's a recognition that we have to focus not only on capital but also on maintenance. We're not there, but we are making progress. I'm very happy with the progress we're starting to make. Other services, I'm going to roll through this quickly. Permitting is one of the services that we provide. We have two permitting biologists within our program that are very skilled and have a very high level of expertise and do, in fact, provide their service at a very high level of expertise at a very low cost. This is actually a bargain for the agency when we do that. We also have a survey section that really focuses mainly on the properties that we acquire or the properties that we already have, so we know where our boundaries are and we don't have issues like trespass. Program organization, when I came here 4 years ago, we had, I believe, 140 approved FTEs, of which we had about 120 of those positions filled. And you can see by the bullet here that we're down to 80 staff. So we've seen a reduction of about, 33%, just about 33% of our staffing has reduced. Part of that, let me just finish the bullet. Engineers, project managers, and I do want to stress project managers because I'll talk about that again in just a minute. Engineering aides, construction professionals, biologists, surveyors, and administrative staff located in three locations, Olympia, Yakima, and Lacey. One of the reasons why we've reduced is not because the workload has reduced, because, in fact, the workload has not reduced. When I came in 4 years ago, one of the things that we really wanted to focus on, especially coming out of the Burke report, was to ask the question, what's the right size for the service that we're providing? And what we wanted to do was take a look at each one of the areas and ask the question, is this the right staff for what we're trying to do? Is this the right approach for where we're trying to go? And is it cost effective? And in fact, over a period of time, what we found was that we had the opportunity to lean up the machine. And in fact, that's what we've done. So 80 staff right now for the program that we currently had up until yesterday was probably appropriate. But we'll talk about that more. So, improving the organization. This is really the focus. This talks about the focus of where I'm trying to take the program. Project management needs to be a foundation for this program. That's one of the areas that if we're going to be successful, we will do project management effectively. And it will be a core, if not the core service that we provide, project management. Design, we will continue to do design because we have that expertise in-house, we have the ability to do it, and in some cases, we can do that better than we can hire it from the outside. Design production goes hand in glove with design. Permitting, I talked about our two permitting bios and the cost-effective services that they can produce. Facility management, we have to have a facility management section, and I talked about the focus of where I'm trying to take that, co-locations, consolidations, and better customer service. Two maintenance and construction shops, I talked about the Yakima shop and the expertise that they provide to the agency and actually to the whole Northwest. But we also have a fairly large shop in Lacey that also contains a very high level of expertise in the areas that they're best at. And there are some areas where they are the best. Survey and Fleet Management. Let's see, a new direction.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. How many project managers are we now have on the ground?
Oh, Commissioner, I was afraid you were going to. I think right now our staff of project managers that actually reside with the title of project manager is probably about four. Designers that we have on staff is probably about the same. But also the key piece here is that those designers are transitioning more into that project management area. So the next question might be, well, Bill, how can we ensure that they're going to pick up the skills and the knowledge necessary to move from a design focus to a project management focus? And I guess the answer to that question is by us training them to do that. We have the skill to do that. We have the expertise to do that.
It is a concern, as we've spoken several times on, and particularly focused on that when I saw $67 million in capital projects coming at us. Do we have the project managers to take on that additional workload?
Well, Commissioner, let me pause on that for a moment, because one of the things that we do need to do is recognize, I need to recognize the fact that we have a current capital budget that we were staffed at to operate, to put forward. And now all of a sudden the workload has increased probably by a factor of three or four. So, it's very significant. We're not going to be able to just continue business on status quo. It's going to have to change, and I've already started talking to my staff about that and the people around us about that. We are going to have to bring on some additional project managers to make this work, and one of the areas that we have talked about is the opportunity to locate project managers in those areas where the work resides. So today, as I sit here, one of the things that Glenn, Kathy, and I are going to be looking at is the workload in the different regions and what do we need to do to get bodies out there with that area of expertise to deliver those services. Currently, we're in the process of trying to hire one in Yakima because under the current budget that we had, we wanted to start moving project managers out into those areas, but under the existing budget, we could only afford to move one into Eastern Washington with an idea to service all of Eastern Washington, and Yakima seemed to be the appropriate place to do it. Well, the game has changed. We're looking at a new set of rules right now, and the fact is we do need to get a couple more staff out there. But Commissioner, I don't think it's going to be an enormous increase. It'll be an increase in staff, but it will not be a very noticeable increase. The other key here, and I talked about it just a little bit, moving from design into project management, where it will take somebody, an FTE, to do a design project, that same individual using effective project management can now increase their workload by a factor of about 10. It can be done. But what it requires that we do is that we outsource work that we might have normally done in-house and utilize the resources that are out there on the street. And, in fact, that's what the nature of the bill is asking us to do. Because that's the reason why it's called the jobs bill. And down in the body of the bill itself, it talks about the intent of the bill is to put work out on the street and put people in the private sector to work. So that's where our focus is at right now.
That's great to hear. That was my next question, is what abilities do we have to spread this, to outsource, to create the jobs that hopefully this would do and bring in the expertise to get us efficiency that we need? Because I think we're a little behind in our project engineering concept to get that fully implemented, but we're making great progress. No complaints, but just keep heading in that direction. I think that's great.
Okay. Well, Commissioner, the budget size that we're talking about right now is it's a lot for this agency, but it's a start for where we're trying to go. It doesn't take care of all of our problems. It takes care of a pretty significant, this is a big bite of the apple here, but it's not the whole apple. The model that I'm trying to move us towards is the model that I used when I was at the Department of Corrections, and my budget there was $500 million. So when we talk about the magnitude and the size of the apple that we're dealing with, I'm very confident that we have the skills and we have the people to pull this off. And that's one of the things that I told my staff earlier this week, is that we have the team. We have the skills. We're at the threshold right now. What we need to do is step across and make it happen. And I'm very confident that we're going to do that. So, very confident.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill, I'm fairly new to the commission, so I'm just getting up to speed on this. Deputy Director Storr passed out this 8-page document. And I guess my question would be, how are these projects prioritized and who does that? And then secondly, what do you see the timeline attached to these projects?
Each one of the categories were prior. So there's a whole series of categories. One is fish hatcheries, one is dams and dikes, one is accesses, so on and so forth. As an agency, we prioritized each category, and then we carried each category forward to the House of Representatives. That's essentially how it occurred. So the priorities were created by the agency. So it's not just, you know, I didn't just sit down and do it. It was done agency-wide.
Follow up. That being the case, now that they're in print, how do you prioritize them now? Because you can't attack them all at one sweep, can you? Or help me to understand that just a little bit.
Well, actually, Commissioner, my plan is to attack them all at once. So what we're in the process of doing, and I've already got our contract specialist cranked up. I took them the list and showed how many consultants we need and what the grouping of projects would be. And my intent is as soon as we possibly can to hit the street with an advertisement and then start collecting proposals from consultants and then hit all of these projects all at once.
But that's a great response. Thank you.
That is my intent.
You stick work overtime, Joe.
Yes, there will probably. Well, see, the fun thing about that is that I'm overtime exempt, so I can work as many hours as I want. That's the cool thing.
Welcome to the club.
Okay, let me.
Commissioner Duvia.
Let me interrupt just for a second. Commissioner Carpenter wasn't present on this evolution, I think we have to call it. Before Director Anderson and before Bill Phillips, our performance of on time, on budget was weak, I'll call it.
That's a kind statement. Okay.
Yeah. So, but we are right now, and they do monitor. They have a commitment on time, on budget, on progress, and systems in place, and he's doing a great job.
Very nice to hear.
Thank you, Commissioner. So again, some of the other areas that the direction went, and again, to kind of tie into what Commissioner Duvia said, the direction really changed 4 years ago, and we continue to lean on that. So rebuilding the capital process, we started that about 4 years ago, rebuilding the way that we create the budgets and manage the budgets. And I think that we've made great steps forward. We still have the opportunity for a great deal of improvement, which we continue to focus on. Budgeting and accounting, also control of assets. This really links back into the condition assessment, and what do we do with that assessment once we have it produced? How do we fold that into our budget? And that's some of the things that we're really trying to focus on also. Customer focus. This was one of the big pieces that I really wanted my program to really take a look at. Customer focus. It's not just producing the work, but it's meeting the needs of your customer, and it's understanding that when you are a service provider that you have a customer service obligation. And sometimes it's a real shift in cultural thinking, but it's one that I really continue to focus on. It's also referred to as the soft skills of project management. So collaboration, efficiency and provider of choice. I have that last bullet there because that's always been one of the statements or the flag that I fly in our program, is we don't want to just provide a service. And we don't want to just provide the service or have you ask for the service because you have to ask for the service. We want to be the customer, the provider of services that you go to because you know that we're going to produce what you want. And again, we're continuing to work down that path. We have some baggage from the past that we continue to need to shed. But again, I think we've made great progress, and we continue to do so. So from here, just very quickly, this little pie chart talks about the budget from the 2009-11 biennium. Again, things have changed dramatically. But what this does is it talks about the amount of capital expenditures and operating expenditures that we went through in the 2009-11. And actually, we were successful in implementing the work that was put forward to us in the 2009-11, and in the 2011-13, we're going to be even more successful. So our reappropriation off of SBCA funds or state building construction account funds, I think we were looking at a reappropriation level of about 20% crossing over the biennium, which is the target that we had set, and actually it's a very good target to hit. So let me jump forward. This is the fun part. So this is, I'm going to go through these very quickly because I only have just a minute or two left. But it gives you a sense of some of the types of things that we do. The first three slides are some of the screen diversions that the Yakima shop is involved in. This is the Keach Jensen screen site. It's on the Menashtash Road, I think is what it's called. The Barnes Road screen, same location, but it's actually what's referred to as the Barnes Road Bridge or something like this. But again, it shows some of the work that the shop in Yakima produce. And basically what they're doing is they produce the metalwork and the screen cleaning systems, which have to be fully automated without somebody there to keep an eye on it. So reliability and integrity is very important in the work that they do. And again, one of the key pieces is they really are the provider of choice. The people seek them out to do the work. So this is the type of stuff that we as an agency should be very proud of. And I guess to put it in a nutshell, they're out there saving fish is what they're doing. They're really, really doing what we need. Cub Creek Culvert, this is a project that we did over in eastern Washington. It was extremely difficult, but it links into some of the fish passage improvement work that we're doing. This was a major fish passage barrier, and what looks like about 4 feet of fill over the top of this the top of this arch at one point in time was about 12 feet of fill over a six-foot pipe, and it was a definite barrier. It's a very nice project. Unfortunately, what this one doesn't do is it doesn't talk about how difficult that project was. This was implemented by the shop in Lacey, designed by our engineers, implemented by the shop in Lacey. This is one of the cooperative projects that we did with Habitat Program. It was construction of log growings in the, I think it's the North Fork of the Toutle River. I think I have the right, was it the North? Yeah, the North Fork of the Toutle River. The intent of the project was to reduce erosion, and there were about 800 of these logs installed to create these erosion control structures. Very, very good cooperative project. Some of the other types of things that we do, this is an example at Audubon Lake. We constructed a viewing blind. So a lot of these projects, as they're designed, this kind of goes back to that level of expertise that I like to talk about. This was a very good viewing blind. The Spokane Laboratory Building at Region 1, this was one of the projects that we're very proud of. It was designed, again, by a consultant. We provided the project management. And then it was constructed by a contractor in the Spokane area. So what this represents is about 5,000 square feet of storage, laboratory space, and enforcement storage, I guess is how I would identify it. Then we do a lot of accesses. Aloika Lake, which is over in Region 1, was one of our projects that we did. Mile Post 8 Access. This is in the Yakima Canyon location. This one was actually constructed by the screen shop in Yakima. So as we tried to start spreading the work out and diversifying, this is one of the projects that we asked them to pick up and see how well they could do. They actually did an exceptional job on this. I was very happy with it. Newman Lake Access, I just like this photo because I think it's a really cool photo when you look at it. Project that we designed, constructed by contractor. Silver Lake Access, this is also a very pretty one, floats, ramp, and access. This Silver Lake, I believe, also is in Region 1. Where is that, Kittitat? I think it's in Spokane County, yeah. Whatcom Lake Fishing Pier, this is one of the fun ones that we did up north here on the west side, designed in-house, constructed by contractor. Really, really nice improvement. Provides tremendous access to the lake. Seuss Creek Hatchery Generator, the only reason I threw this in here is because this, is, again, is one of the areas of expertise that my crew has. When we do electrical designs and installations for backup of our hatchery facilities, our electrical shop out of Lacey has a very high level of expertise, and the quality of their work is superb. George Adams Hatchery Pond, this is actually a fairly old project, but again, I thought it was a really neat photo, so I wanted to share it with you. This is a project that the Lacey shop constructed, and actually 4 years ago, it was a trial project so I could determine their effectiveness when they actually go out and construct something. The project cost about $900,000, and they were under the estimate. They were on time, and the quality of the work was exceptional. So what they did was they were able to prove to us as an agency that they do have areas that they can really excel at. So, Hurt Creek Hatchery Ponds, this was done, I think, about 6 or 7 months ago. We had some failing ponds up at Hurt Creek. And again, the Lacey shop went up and constructed these at a fairly economical rate, and the quality of the work was superb. Morris Creek Acclimation Pond, this doesn't really show the ponds or anything. I just like the photo because I think it's kind of artistic. What this is the piping and the walkway coming off of the pump station heading towards the ponds. But it was a cooperative project that we had, and actually we had both Lacey shop and the Yakima shop providing some of the work on this. So it was a very successful project. It's related to the removal of the Elwha Dam, and what this project does is it gives us the ability to acclimate salmon while the habitat above where the dam location was or the, restores itself. So it's a short-term project, but again, it's very important. Washougal Hatchery Rearing Pond, this was a project that we designed in-house, constructed with private contractor. The cool thing about this pond is about 18,000 square feet of pond space. Interestingly enough, it's about 440 feet long, so it is a huge, huge rearing pond, but it was a major improvement to the hatchery itself. Skookumchuck Hatchery, this was one of the major rebuilds that we did in our system. What you're looking at is a one piece of the last phase. These are the adult ponds that you're focused on. But in addition to that, we had water control distribution box that we created, as well as a fairly significant fishway going from the Skookumchuck River up to the hatchery itself. So that last slide about Skookumchuck, as we start to look at projects further out for us and we take a look at this list that the legislature provided to us, what it really does is it identifies what the possibilities are for us as an agency. And this is where we're trying to go.
So. Okay, Commissioner Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I held this from the beginning. I didn't want to interrupt your flow. When you were talking about facility management, you mentioned NRB issues, and as if we would know what they were. I don't know what the issues are with NRB buildings. You could just
give us I'm sorry, Commissioner. I thought everybody knew. Well, this building was I'm not going to give you all of
I'm
the
I'm not
history.
Looking for a long answer.
Yeah,
so quick.
Unfortunately, I was involved in the creation of this building over 20 years ago. I probably shouldn't admit that, but I had some involvement. The building itself has what's known as a EIFS exterior system on it, which is really more of a cement-looking panel. So when you go up to the second floor, if you're down on the first floor and you bang on the outside of the walls, it's very hard, very secure. It's a stucco-type finish. But if you go up one floor all the way up to the top, what you'll see is this, it's almost like an imitation stucco-type finish. It's very inexpensive, and it was state-of-the-art about 20 years ago. The problem is it wasn't state-of-the-art in the Northwest. And so part of the problems that's occurred over the last 20 years is there's been leakage through that system, and there were some areas where mold has started to develop within the exterior walls of this building. We discovered this, 6 months to a year ago. DES came in, did some testing, and thank goodness determined that it was not toxic mold. But they also determined that there's issues that have to be resolved. And what the plan is DES is putting out a contract for about $3 million to repair the entire south face of this building, which means that they're going to have to pull all that wall off and replace it. The challenge to the operating agencies is that now we have to relocate people within the building, because in order to be able to do that, they have to be able to isolate the exterior wall, meaning that they have to create a new exterior wall interior to the building. So the disruption is going to be fairly significant. So one of the things that Julie's doing, working with DES and also the safety office, the HR department within our agency, and others, is try to figure out how to do this thing with as minimal disruption as we can. But we're talking about a fairly significant effort here. It's a big, big effort. So,
thank you.
Okay, thanks. Director Anderson?
I just wanted to say just a couple of things. We talked a little bit about where we were 4 years ago with the Burke report and a really condemnation of our capital assets management program. And actually, Joe Storr is responsible for bringing Bill Phillips in as the leader of this program. And we broke the program out of business services and made it its own program and had Bill as the assistant director of the program. And his leadership, I think, is aptly demonstrated here about given where we are today versus where we were 4 years ago. He understands our agency's values. He understands, which include making sure that we have strong cross-program coordination where that makes sense, and you saw that evidenced in his work with the Habitat program. And behind any successful leader is a great team, and people like Kathy, Cody, and Glenn Girth are really good examples of that make up this great team. And I'm not sure what other thing could demonstrate the credibility that we've gained as much as the trust that's been put in, that's been provided to the agency that's associated with the capital dollars that have been provided to us to carry forward on this pretty impressive list of projects. So my compliments to Bill and his team. They're doing a fantastic job, and I wanted to acknowledge his work and the accomplishments of the program.
Thank you. Express the appreciation of the commission, too, because I remember a lot of meetings devoted to the problems that gave rise to the legislature calling for the Burke report in the first place. And it was arduous for the commission. And some of the Burke report addressed failings of the commission in providing sufficient oversight and accountability. So I think we're all in a much better position now. We're getting excellent reports, very thorough reports. All the indicators are that the legislature trusts the agency again, and we're doing our job, so terrific. Very good. Well done.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thanks. Okay, let's move on. We're pretty far behind in our schedule, but the next item, number 4, technology and financial management overview. This is a briefing. We've slated it for 70 minutes. We're going to be pretty hungry at the end of this if you keep us to that amount of time. But we have David Giglio, our Assistant Director, Technology and Financial Management, and Michael D'Angelo, Chief Information Officer. I think this was in response to a blue sheet by Commissioner Jennings.
So. I think two blue sheets are being pulled together into one.
It's more powerful that way. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. I'm David Giglio, Assistant Director for Technology and Financial Management. This is a program overview, and I will focus primarily on our results and challenges. You have in your handbook, you've got the four-pager overview that includes a lot of basic facts and information. I'll spend our time today really focusing on some of the results and some of the challenges we face moving forward. But if I do need to go back and explain anything that's more basic, just let me know. I'll also start off by talking quickly about the program roles and our funding. You're well aware of many of our roles in leadership and vision. You work very closely with the director, deputy director, program management. So it's clear that we play that type of role in some parts of the director's office. We also play that in a lot of our back office functions. With IT, there are new technological opportunities, and good leadership can help us be more effective. With our contracts processing, we can make improvements there. There's fiscal accountability, and of course, on the budget side, there's communications and relations with the legislature that help improve credibility. So there are lots of opportunities for leadership throughout this program. Another role of the program is to adhere to standards. That could vary from on the IT side. It could be security standards on HR. It could be hiring practices, labor law. It could be accounting standards, contract law. There are lots of different ways in which what we're doing is just making sure that we're doing the right thing the right way. We also manage resources. On the HR side, that's, you know, there's a lot of work around evaluations, around hiring correctly. It's also asset management and inventory control. It's also fund management, looking at fund balances, looking ahead to financial or fiscal problems, and making sure we prevent those or are prepared for them. So there's a lot of work that we do that involves managing the agency resources. And lastly, our basic function is to ensure that the agency mission can be accomplished by our field staff. It's to ensure that people have the tools, the resources, materials that they need to be effective in the field. That's our bottom line reason for existing. If you've ever wondered, it's true, we are not normal. We are a very unusual agency. There are a few things that make us quite different from other agencies. I want to talk about them because they really increase the complexity of managing us as an agency. First is that our staff are they're widely distributed across the state. That's an asset in terms of customer relations, but from a service perspective, it means that our IT shop has 200 offices to provide services to. It means that our staff are very far from our HR department. We also have a lot of field work, which means we have a lot of in-the-field risk. We're not a desk agency, so on the HR side, there are a lot of safety concerns that come into play. We're also very reliant on contracts. It's a huge workload on the contract staff, the fiscal staff, and also for program staff. Half of our funding comes from federal sources, local sources, other state agencies. 2,000 specific receivable agreements in play right now, 2,000 different agreements funding us to do particular work on behalf of someone else. So that means that there's a lot of paperwork on the administrative side. It also means that for the biologists in the field, they are managing 2,000 agreements. That means that we have biologists who are working with the whole process of managing workloads, monitoring spending, building a spending plan in the first place, and writing contracts. It's very administrative work, different from the game management or fisheries biology work that they were trained to do. And the risk here is that if we have clunky and ineffective systems, we're going to be very inefficient with those biologists. Another effect of having such a high reliance on contracts is that the use of our money is quite limited. We have limited flexibility in how we spend our dollars because roughly half of our budget is earmarked for specific projects, specific purposes. The third way in which we're different that I want to highlight is that we have such a high volume of temporary and seasonal staff that creates a workload, especially for HR, also for the programs. it's roughly a third of our staff. Over the course of a year, roughly a third of them are not permanent employees. They're temporary. So there's a payroll aspect to that, a health benefit, IT services aspect to that, plus the HR work of hiring and managing employees. And, of course, the programs also have a share of that workload. So, again, if we do those processes well, that helps limit the time loss for the programs. If we do it in a way that's inefficient, it hurts them. This, I think, you've seen before. It's in the handout. Quick overview of where the FTEs are in business services. The director's office is at the top. The technology and financial management portions are at the bottom. The big chunks, human resources, our regional offices, information technology, financial services, and the licensing division. In terms of our budget, this is how the program is funded. The slice of pie that's at 10 o'clock, the license transaction fees. So those are the transaction fees from the WILD system. The licensing division is pretty much self-funded through those. And the rest of the pie reflects the way the other programs in the agency work. It's just basic auditing, accountability thing, accounting thing. Our administrative costs are paid for proportionate to how programs work. That way, no fund is subsidizing another fund. The situation we want to avoid is if we have too little of one color of money administration, it means that some other color of money, some other pot of money is paying for someone else's administrative responsibility. So to keep that fair and square, we're proportionate to the rest of the agency. I also wanted to point out what our role is in the agency's funding. The blue wedge on the right are the receivable agreements, the 2,000 contracts that we receive. That funds 44% of the agency budget, also a slice of that purple, all others, and that's $200 million a biennium. It's about three-fifths of our staff funded by those receivable agreements. The red wedge on license sales, that's the revenue that we, of course, generate for ourselves to support our staff. So those two pieces, while the main work, of course, is the on-the-ground field work, this is work that can't happen without the administrative infrastructure of contracts management, of a fiscal staff, and of the licensing division to make those things happen. That's three-quarters of the agency budget that is, in a sense, self-funded and has an administrative workload that's crucial. So I want to focus next, spend most of my time talking about results and challenges. As I look at the budget office, I'm not going to read through all of these. I want to focus on the highlights. Second bullet down, the real benefit of having an effective budget office is that it does affect our relationships across the street, helps protect the resources we have, helps procure new ones. That's kind of a leadership role. The bottom three bullets here are kind of the leadership role that budget can play. The top one is a bit more of the nuts and bolts infrastructure role. How much money do we have to spend? How do we organize that in terms of coding, in terms of setting up accounts and spending plans? How do we manage our funds and look ahead? The third bullet has to do with the fiscal discipline of applying our foresight, looking ahead, avoiding problems. And the last one really has to do with that communication piece that's so important with maintaining our credibility, with being transparent and being principled. The biggest challenge we face in the budget office is that we've made a lot of reforms lately, and there's a lot of workload associated with that. It's just a matter of keeping up with the workload. Looking ahead, the big issues are the first bullet. The wildlife account has some structural deficit dimensions to it. We need to be planning for that so that we do not have to curtail some of the work we currently perform. The budget office is leading a work group that's cross-agency to start building some options and bring that to the executive management team to think about how we face that problem and keep it from being something that surprises us or that prevents us from accomplishing our mission. And the last one I want to focus on is the fourth bullet, is that communications with the legislature, and I think I've already covered that. With our contracts, grants, and purchasing staff, the key benefits here, the key roles they play, they negotiate and prepare the contracts. They make sure that we're doing things in a way that complies with the laws, and we're managing 2,500 active contracts at any one time. challenges include the huge workload. On a per FTE basis, this is astronomical. Plus, we have some very complex agreements out there, and we have increasing responsibilities from the federal government on how we report what we've done.
That was a nice, subtle way of saying the increased workload for reporting to the feds. Yeah, pretty intense lately.
It's easy to underestimate just how much work it is. It's a dramatic increase in how much reporting there is. Part of it has to do with the Homeland Security dimensions of making sure that everyone who works on a contract is a U.S. citizen and is eligible to work. That's a huge amount of paperwork, but then there's also a dramatic increase in the amount of reporting that you have to do for federal funding. It's a whole new workload. And like most federal systems, it's not simple. It's like the tax code. So moving forward, how do we handle this? Well, we need to focus in the next 2 years on really making sure that we're using templates and standards to streamline our contract development process as much as possible. We need to make sure we provide training to staff. Again, we have several hundred field staff who are responsible for administering these contracts. They are not experts in contracts law, yet they are implementing contracts law. So we need to make sure that they know what to do or when to ask for help. Lastly, the third bullet, we need to automate whatever we can. And this is not going to be easy to do. The contracts development process is a very complicated one. Ideally, we would have an automated system that would take us through contract development to approval to coding and budget and spending plans and payments. It's all one process. That's not going to happen in the immediate future, but that would be a nice thing to do. In the fiscal office, just take a look at some of those numbers. Over 40,000 vendor payments, almost 16,000 purchasing card transactions. It's a huge volume of work, payments for everything that we do. Second bullet has to do with inventory control, which includes our boats, our vehicles, our weapons. Obviously, you don't want to lose track of that. We're doing it at half the rate of what's required. We're doing it half as often as it's required. Third bullet has to do with our cash receipts. Again, $100 million a year comes into the agency through our fiscal office through those receivable agreements. On the payroll side, we have over 40,000 timesheets annually. And then the payroll office also handles making health care determinations for over 1,200 decisions. Challenges that they face have to do with having lost a quarter of their positions over the last 10 years. We've grown the number of payments we make without increasing our staff, with decreasing our staff. One of the things that means is we've been less timely. That creates a cost to the programs. We used to be able to pay bills promptly and get an early payment discount, and we're now at the point where we're facing late fees and penalties. That money comes out of the program budgets. It erodes their capacity to do work on the ground. And of course, the processes have also become more complex. Moving forward, where we can, we need to streamline, look for ways to simplify and speed these processes that may involve IT and automation. In human resources, they support a number of staff, 1,300 permanent staff and about 370 seasonal and temporary staff on average. And they provide our hiring, payroll support for all these new employees. They're also responsible for risk assessments, compliance with the American with Disabilities Act. The challenge here is that each HR consultant we have is supporting 250 staff. The agency standard is 100 or 125. That's for an average agency. If you remember that we have 600 or 700 or 800 or 900 temporary staff hired each year, that's an additional workload. All those career seasonal staff, there's a big workload associated with hiring those people and managing them. So we have an extremely high amount of transactions relative to our agency, and yet we are staffed lower than the standard. To move forward, one of our goals here is to make sure that all supervisors have basic supervisory training. This is a basic requirement. We do not comply with it. And this is a way that we can help eliminate risk. We experience a great amount of risk by not having all of our staff properly trained, all of our supervising staff properly trained. Information technology, I'll go over much more briefly, since you're going to hear from Michael D'Angelo in just a few minutes. The big results, basically IT makes everything possible. It's our connectivity, it's our basic tools of computers, phones, wireless, smartphones someday. They make everything possible. The challenges we face, the one that I want to, I guess I'll talk through each of these. One of them is, one complexity is the number of work sites. We have far fewer staff than average, than expected, for supporting desktops. We also have more territory to cover. So when you add in that travel time, you find that we're even more, it's not just three times below, we're more than that when you have to, when you factor in the travel time. On the service desk side, we're about 1/7 of the industry standard for our staffing, and that means that field staff are waiting for days or weeks to get bugs fixed on their computers. They don't have access to the software tools they need, or they're spending their own time trying to do the troubleshooting in a less efficient way than if we could do it with a trained expert. Third bullet, we maintain over 40 agency-specific applications. Some of these have to do with the complexity of the agency. For instance, the statewide HRMS system is designed to pay staff. It works for simpler agencies. For us, because we have so many staff who work essentially as consultants, billing all these various specific contracts, you cannot build a time system that simply spits out payments for us. We have a very complicated billing system for our staff. We've built our own total time system that helps form a bridge between our staff work and the statewide standard system. So the complexity of our agency has led us to create additional complexity by having to maintain our own application to use a statewide system. Looking ahead, this first bullet is the key, finding ways to improve processes and improve efficiency. That's so much easier said than done. So much easier. You have to understand the whole system. You have to understand who needs the information, how it's used. We're in very fortunate to have Michael D'Angelo with us in this role. He gets this better than anyone. And he'll talk more about that on his presentation. So the last division I want to talk about is licensing. In some ways, licensing is the face of the agency. We have over 1 million customers across the state. The one thing they have in common is that they bought a license. They may have bought that through our online system. They may have bought it through a phone call with our staff. Or they may have bought it through a dealer who was trained by our staff. So the better we do our job in the licensing division, the better face we present to our customers. And again, they generate over $50 million in sales that support agency functions. They also had a heck of a year, I might add. New Discover Pass, a lot of changes to the fee bill, and we're in the process of rebidding the Wild data system. And despite all that workload and despite all of the newness, they handled it without a glitch. Everything was done on time, and we had good functionality. They've just done a remarkable job, and Bill Joplin and his team deserve a lot of kudos for that. Moving forward here, the one opportunity that we see is that with our connection to dealers, the licensing team may be well-positioned to look at ways to improve our marketing and our access so that we can increase participation in sales. So basic conclusions here to wrap this up, and then I'll take questions. In a nutshell, we are the basic agency infrastructure. Our work can enhance field staff's productivity, or we can limit it. And I'd say right now we're a bottleneck for the programs in IT, in HR, and in contracts. We have improvements to make there. As an agency, we have very high administrative complexity, but we also have low staffing levels. What does that mean? We've managed that by reducing service levels. We reduce support for our field staff. Now, that can work out well in some instances, or it can work out to be very inefficient. Follow me with a little bit of math here. If it takes an extra 2 hours to manage a contract for our biologist, to manage a contract, the spending plan, knowing where they're at, if they spend an extra 2 hours a month having to deal with that paperwork, over the course of a year, that's about 25 hours. We have 2,000 of those agreements. That's 50,000 hours. When you take into effect leave time, that's about 30 FTEs of productive time. So, I take a cost-benefit analysis approach to this. Can we add one or two staff to focus on making improvements to a contracts process that frees up those 30 FTEs of lost paperwork time that's frustrating for the biologists? And I think in answer to the question of how much administration do you need, I would say as little as possible, as little to get the job done. But when we are costing productivity in the field, you've got too little. So our challenge moving forward is to build better systems. People are working their tails off. They're committed. They're fantastic staff. They're very knowledgeable and experienced. We're very lucky to have the staff we have. You can't get more out of them. Can't work them harder than they're already working. We can build better systems. Very complicated work, but I think we're up to that challenge. Another key thing is collaborating with programs. There are customers. As we revise processes, they have to be a part of that. Lastly, we need to prioritize, drop what we can, and then identify what processes can be decentralized. Michael will talk about that a little bit, I think. What can we stop doing and not lose any efficiencies? So that's the end of the presentation. I'll take any questions you have.
Commissioner Duvia.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Nice job. Very informative for us. I got two general questions, and one is, what's the timeline for the wild system replacement for the new vendor? And I don't know, the second question is maybe for Deputy Director Storr or one of you, the cost accounting system that we've been looking at, what's the status of that?
So for the licensing system, we should have a contract in place this month to build the new system. It should be in effect, I believe, January 1st, 2014 or December of 2013.
Which is it? 13?
Either the 31st of 2013 or the 1st of 2014. New Year's Eve or New Year's, I'm not sure which. And then the second question, cost allocation. So one of the reforms that we've had over the last year is distributing the overhead costs for PCs, for space, for attorneys, decentralizing that so it's in program budgets and not simply in business services budget. And that is that what you're asking about?
And that's part of it. But the main part of that cost accounting system that we've been looking at is for the building capital improvement programs on their project engineers.
This is a capital budget question.
Yeah.
Okay, that one I can't answer.
Thank you.
Deputy Director Storr.
Commissioner Duvia, the accounting system was put in place per the Burke report 2 or 3 years ago, and I don't believe we have any additional adds to what we did at that point in time. So maybe you and I aren't connecting. We could talk about it on the side. But
yeah, well, that's fine.
Okay.
Commissioner Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You had a pie chart that was a proportional cost to various parts of the agency. Do you charge indirect or direct rates to get your staff funded? I mean, indirect versus direct to get your...
So the business services budget includes... So in this pie chart, it shows $63 million. Of that, about $40 million is cash, state dollars. And of that, about 20-some million, 23-ish million, is earned indirect from all those agreements. That offsets some of those costs.
Thank you. And then you mentioned there were some structural deficits on the wildlife account that needed to be addressed. Could you just touch on that a little bit?
As a result of the legislature having made some one-time fund shifts and some permanent fund shifts, we're now carrying more work on the wildlife account than we have before. at this point in time, I think on this biennium, we look at spending maybe a little under $1 million more non-restricted general purpose wildlife account revenue than we will earn. So we'll draw the fund balance down. The non-restricted portion of the account is already a few million dollars under its minimum balance to cover its working capital reserve. The problem gets worse next biennium. The good news for staff is that the 3% pay cut goes away, that pay will get restored next biennium unless they take specific actions to nix that again. But if they don't, that means another $1 million of payroll comes back to the account. So that'll drive it down further. If there's any inflation, any increases in fish food costs, that'll drive the deficit down further. So what we'll see, we have a structural deficit. It's kind of small now, but it's going to grow. And that's why looking at it now makes a lot of sense, so we can have a strategy in place to deal with it before we're in crisis mode or before we need a handout or a bailout from the legislature.
And I just wanted to compliment you on the job you're doing with the resources you have. You know, it's not ideal. You've identified some challenges you have. It's nice to know that those have been identified. But you can only do what you can do with the resources you have. And I also wanted to compliment you on your storytelling. Your use of the 2 hours times the contracts times the effect helps make it easier to take it from an abstract concept if we don't have enough resources to translate it into, by hiring 2 new people here, we may save 15 FTEs worth of paperwork down the road.
Right.
That makes it much more easy to understand why it's appropriate to add more resources there as opposed to other places. So.
Well, thank you.
Commissioner Perry?
Yeah, I was impressed with your talk and the amount of things you cover within the department and the work that's produced. Well over state recommended averages and so forth. That is truly impressive, but I worry about can you keep that up? The economy isn't necessarily that good. The increases may not be forthcoming. Can your staff keep that up?
It's a huge risk for us, Commissioner. Many parts of this agency where we're more focused on biology, those staff aren't going to go to other agencies because they want to be working here. And a lot of our administrative functions, those same functions exist in every agency in the state. So they can be picked off. They can be picked off by local government. If our workload gets to be too high, if they can go to a job where the pay is the same or higher for a smaller workload and less stress, we see some people doing that. We see some people taking that opportunity and leaving. So it is a real risk for us on the retention side. And of course, as an agency, we have, I think, 200 employees who are eligible to retire. So we're going to lose staff as an agency regardless. We really can't afford to lose them because we overwork them. And that's why the emphasis needs to be on smarter systems. The answer can't be work harder, work faster. It's got to be, where's the waste in this process? What is taking time? Are you rekeying something that someone else already keyed in? Let's make that an automated process so it gets keyed in once and there's no risk of error from rekeying it and there's no time lost. That's what we need to think about is what we can stop doing without cutting productivity or safety.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, looks like no more questions, but I want to thank you too, compliment you. Excellent job really highlighting the strategic thinking that you're doing, the very intelligent response to our difficult conditions.
Madam Chair.
Director Henderson.
Just a couple of comments. David has done an outstanding job since taking on the leadership of this program about a year ago. Is that almost, not quite, coming up on a year ago. And the advances, I mean, and he was here about a year before that he joined the DFW's team. Similar values, great values. That you heard talk about program collaboration, cross-program work. That's a key value that we're instilling and that everybody is has really embraced. And, you know, if I look back 3 or 4 years ago, every program was their own little entity. There was friction between the budget shop and the programs, and everybody was doing their own thing. That's all changed. And that's because of the values that David has brought forward and his team has of reaching out and breaking down those barriers between the programs and our budget shop, where we're now, I mean, I'm not saying it's perfect or that we don't have improvements yet to make, not only here but in other areas, but it's a big change in culture and in values across the agency that's displayed here. I think the confidence that OFM has in us because of David's leadership and his great team is another place that the benefits really show themselves. That as OFM responds to our budget submittal and has questions or concerns, having the confidence in our answers, having that credibility, pays big dividends, and I don't mean just in dollars. So great job by David, and he's got a lot of really great people. Some of them are here with him, Lee and Jennifer, and there's other people up that are up on the fifth floor that are part of his team that have really advanced where we are. We know where our money's coming from. We know how we're spending it, and we're making sure that we're spending it in the appropriate places has been a big improvement. So congratulations, kudos to David, and I know Michael's up next, and you're going to see some similar really great things from Michael.
Good.
Thank you, Phil.
Thanks.